going to pursue any particular subject. I may, if I have the opportunity, go back to a little, I don't know what you'd call it. It's not an exchange, but a peculiar situation that has to do with a person by the name of Randy Jordan, who is responding to someone whom he calls Van Hale. It's not myself, obviously, because he can't get any of my beliefs correct, so I don't know. He's talking about somebody else. I think he thinks that he's talking about me, but if you're addressing yourself to a person's point of view, as he insists that he is doing, and you don't read what the person's written, you don't, you've never talked with him about his ideas, you don't listen to this broadcast and proceed with comments and arguments and claim to be addressing yourself in criticism and debate with Van Hale, and yet you're hiding out somewhere where there is not allowed an actual discussion between two individuals. It's hard to, for me really to kind of understand that kind of approach, but anyway, that's his approach. He claims he's addressing himself to me, but he obviously, from his lengthy comments, I have, oh, let's see, what do I have that he's posted recently? I have 5, 8, 11 pages that he's, in which he's attacking my point of view, and yet he doesn't address himself really to anything that I believe. So I guess maybe what I will do is read to you a couple of comments. The subject of polygamy just simply isn't going to go away. There's no sense thinking that it's going to. It's probably discussed as much now as it was 10 years ago or 50 years ago or 100 years ago. It's comes up all the time. There are many books being written, many articles being written on the subject, and of course a tremendous amount that's being discussed on the internet on the subject. I'm going to just take a look at one of these little items that I was referring to. This is a post of Randy Jordan on exmormon.com on the 17th of July, so it's not too long ago. And he makes this comment. He says, Hale said on his show a few months ago, paraphrasing, and that's interesting that this is a paraphrase, that he had studied Joseph Smith's polygamy practice for many years, and he had found no evidence that polygamy served to provide Smith with increased sexual opportunities. Hale's attitude flies in the face of documentation of many of Smith's closest friends and disciples, which has been detailed by such LDS historians as Todd Compton and Richard Van Wagner. Since many of Smith's close, loyal associates, as well as many of his former plural wives, testified that those relationships were sexual, Hale is simply in intellectual denial of the facts regarding excerpts from Compton's research. Well, Todd Compton, I've of course talked with him, talked about his work, quoted from it, cited from it many, many times over the last several years. And his book is certainly a significant contribution to the discussion and research in the field of Mormon polygamy, particularly that that was practiced in the early days and was initiated by Joseph Smith. But Randy substantially misstates my position. I had never made any assertion of any sort that I had found no evidence that polygamy served to provide Joseph Smith with increased sexual opportunities. What is clear in looking at polygamy throughout Mormon history is there is a predominant point of view among those who are non-LDS and those who are ex-Mormons as, and I'm referring to those that are like Randy Jordan talking about the subject on such sites as exmormon.org and other numerous sites on the internet. But the position being taken is that Joseph Smith was some kind of a sexual addict, or, and that's a term that I'm that Randy Jordan uses in his. He says this: Hale knows that if he admits that Joseph Smith was a sexual addict, that reflects poorly on Smith's character and his alleged prophethood. So Hale's tactic is to reject or downplay the information so that he can maintain his testimony. It's interesting that this Randy Jordan seems to be such an expert on Van Hale, whom he doesn't listen to and hasn't read anything he's written, seems to be such an expert on Van Hale as that he knows what Van Hale thinks. Well, I'm Van Hale. I'm just simply saying he's not talking about me. He can't be, because he isn't accurately presenting what I believe or think. So he's either talking about another Van Hale, or he just simply, for some reason, is determined to twist and distort and fabricate things and present these things as being the thinking of Van Hale, and then proceeds to attack these and say such things as that Van Hale let me see if I can pick out some words here. He's basically saying that I don't know anything about polygamy and that I'm trying to cover up things. He says, he refers to my view of polygamy as a Pollyanna type view of polygamy. But the point that I wanted to make here is on this, is that you basically have this idea just prevalent throughout the 19th century. It's certainly prevalent today, that Joseph Smith initiated polygamy for the purpose of that it was solely for the purpose of extending his opportunity for sex, that that's what it was about. And my point that I had made some time back, that is being twisted and distorted, is that you go back through LDS history and you look at the revelation in section 132, you look at the letter that Joseph Smith wrote to Nancy Rigdon on explaining plural marriage. You look at this, all of the numerous sermons and articles and things that were written during the polygamy period of the 1900s, and you simply cannot find anywhere in there in which any of the LDS perspective being presented ties into this or buys into this idea that polygamy was initiated originally for the purpose of satisfying anyone's sexual desires. That was not the purpose of it, and that's clear throughout and consistent throughout the literature. We'll come back to this in a minute. I left off right before that commercial with the idea that there has to be a reason why we don't have evidence, strong evidence, like we for Joseph Smith having sexual relations, sexual marriages with these plural wives. Why don't we have more evidence for that than what we have? We have a lot of evidence that Brigham Young had wives who in which the marriage was a sexual marriage. In fact, Randy Jordan brings this out. He talks about Brigham Young having 57 wives from 16 wives. The one thing that he doesn't bring out is that Brigham Young had 56 wives, and he had children only by 16 of them, so there were 40 wives that he didn't, some of them may perhaps have not been able to have children, but certainly not all 40 of them. The vast majority of those were, I'm speculating a little bit, but I think the speculation is certainly reasonable, that of these 40 wives, most of those wives, the marriages were not sexual marriages. They were marriages for some other reason. And when you bring into it, into the whole idea of plural marriage, the idea of marriage for eternity, that opens up a whole other area of that has to be dealt with. There were many women who were sealed for eternity only to Joseph Smith and others, who were with the idea that plural marriage would be something that would be practiced in the eternities. But basically, the reason, the primary reason given for the institution of plural marriage, and this is, we find this advocated in many, many places. I could present quite a number of references on this. But the principal reason was to provide righteous women the opportunity to have a marriage relationship and to have children and family, be married to a righteous man. Now, I've never advocated the idea that the imbalance of men and women was the reason for plural marriage in just in that sense, but the imbalance of righteous women and righteous wanting to be married to and have children with a righteous man, that imbalance is what is presented throughout the history of plural marriage as the basic reason. So, yes, of course there was a sexual element intended in the ideal plural marriages. The ideal plural marriages were marriages wherein a woman who wanted to have be married to a righteous man would be married as a plural wife to a righteous priesthood holder, and she would have children by that man. And that was because there were not enough righteous priesthood holders for the number of righteous women who wanted to have husbands and families with a righteous man. Now, that's a substantially different perspective than the idea that has been held by cynics and skeptics and critics and people who are opposed to the LDS faith, who have taken the position that it was just all about providing greater sexual opportunity to satisfy men's sexual appetite. So that was my point on that, and somehow it seems that some people are unable to understand what my point is, or maybe they understand it and simply will not acknowledge that point and address themselves to that issue. Okay, I'm happy to hear from you. Whatever's on your mind is appropriate this evening. Our subject is open. I'll come back to this if I don't have something somewhere else to go. So, you're on the air.
I was going to ask you, why now do you think that they're finally starting to go after some of these polygamists, like Mark Shirtless?
Well, you know, interestingly, that just brought to mind, I was trying to think of I had a list of people that I'm going to have on my program, and Mark Shirtless is going to be on my program sometime in the next few weeks, and we'll talk about that.
Well, I have a theory of why they're going after polygamists now, after all these years. Could it possibly be that Mitt Romney wants to run for president? Do you think that might have something to do with it?
No, I think that's an outrageous...
That they're trying to clean up their image?
No, I think that's an outrageously bizarre speculation with no foundation, but...
Well, isn't Mitt Romney, doesn't he want to run for president?
I don't know. I hope he runs for president. But.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you think that maybe trying to clean up polygamy might make the American people more receptive to having a Mormon for president?
I can't see that would be the case, no. I can't see how that would have any effect on it. The fact, the best thing I would think for Mitt Romney, and I'm just speculating off the cuff here, but I think the best thing would be for polygamy not to be brought up and not make it into the news anytime in the near future.
Why is that? Why wouldn't you want it making the news?
Well, because polygamy, I think polygamy would be a negative factor for Mitt Romney, having because of the fact that he comes from a long historic Mormon family, and one that has polygamy in its background, and I don't know. I think polygamy would be an issue that would not would alienate some of the evangelicals that seem to have been prominent in this last election. I think a lot of people don't care anything about polygamy because they don't.
I don't have a problem with it as long as the girls are 18 years of age or older.
Do you want to hold on?
Sure.
We'll come right back. Okay, let's continue. Still there, caller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, I have another question, too.
Okay.
Why would you think that... why would Gordon Hinckley get the Medal of Freedom?
Well, I somebody believed that he deserved the Medal of Freedom. I don't... why does somebody get an Academy Award? It's these are things that are subjective decisions made by committees and so forth. I have no...
Do you think it might have been because George Bush was saying thanks for all the votes?
That he was what?
That George Bush might have been saying thank you for all the votes that you gave me?
Well, he didn't... I don't think he got...
You think that was his way of saying thank you?
No, I don't. I think that's a real long
shot. Honestly, why would Gordon B. Hinckley be... I mean, he doesn't believe in freedom. I mean, he oppresses people on a daily basis.
Well, I don't know.
And you know what? The Mormon Church is probably the most corrupt, one of the most corrupt organizations. I mean, they steal all the federal government's money given to them here. I mean... The prophet of your church was a convicted con man. You use God's name to steal money from people. I mean, come on, give me a break. And it's all based on a big lie. And now you're going to start telling me I'm satanic and all this other.
No, I'm not going
right?
to start saying anything
well,
like
I'll
that.
Tell
don't
you what,
don't
the
second.
Mormon church
yeah, don't.
Is,
no, just a minute.
It's one of the most evil organizations, and the problem is you got your people so brainwashed they can't even see it.
Uh huh. I certainly can't see it. I don't know who brainwashed me, but I can't
you
see it.
You were brainwashed from the time you were born, buddy, because. Before a kid's old enough to figure out really what's going on, you get your meat hooks in them. You tell them that they're going to go on a mission, they're going to go to BYU, they're going to get married in the temple. They're brainwashed before at such a young age before they can develop any kind of psychological defense, and that's what you do. And the Mormon religion is nothing but a big cult. And you know what? It's really scary thinking that. Karl Rove is LDS, and he's whispering in the president's ear all the time. And look at where we're at now.
So your position, am I to understand that your position is that a Latter-day Saint does not...
I have nothing wrong with the typical lay priest.
Well,
just the normal,
it sounds like you
people
do.
Of the LDS Church I have no problem with.
So you think it's all right for a Mormon to hold a position, hold a job?
Well, no, I honestly...
No, you don't?
I think the Mormons are trying to take over our country. I really do. I honestly believe that because they got some sick kind of sadistic thing in their back of their mind that they're so arrogant that they think they're better than everyone else. And they have something against the government. They want to get even with the government because we forced them to become a state.
And
because we forced Utah to become a state. That's why they steal the federal government's money here.
Look, you just slow down a little bit. Let's have a little discussion here. I'm not going to cut you off. I mean, you have the whole program, but so do you really believe what you're saying?
Yeah, I do, 100%. I've seen it with my own two eyes.
Well, I'm sure that you haven't seen it with your own two eyes.
I've seen how people get treated here. That don't believe the way you do. I see what you do. I mean, more.
How, how am I mistreating?
You criticize the Catholic religion all the time, not you personally, but the LDS Church, and you molest there's more child molestation cases in the state of Utah than anywhere else.
Oh, that's
and you don't
that's
ever
absurd.
Do anything about
you're
it.
You're just making that up.
No, it's
no, you're
true.
Just making it up.
And you give these people counseling.
What? Okay.
They molest little kids.
Okay.
And
whom,
you give them counseling.
Whom? Well, people who molest little kids are of
course. Yeah, they
of
cover
course,
it up. The
just
LDS
a minute. Just a minute. Why don't?
Covers it up.
Why don't you slow down here a little bit? Don't you think it? Don't you feel like you're abusing me a little bit here? You're just talking over me. You won't let me say anything, and you're claiming that I'm the abuser.
Okay. Well,
hey,
let's just start.
Really,
there's no defense to the indefensible.
Well, you're saying that you really believe what you have to say, and that it's all right for you to believe these things. But if a Latter-day Saint, if a Mormon believes something, that it's just he's just been brainwashed.
Based on lies. You expect anyone with half a brain who isn't brainwashed to believe that some angel came down from heaven, gave a convicted con man some golden plates, that he used two crystals to decipher them, and then the golden plates were taken back up into heaven? Come on, give me a break.
Okay,
you expect people to believe that? How
you,
could
no,
anyone
I, no, of course.
He had to have been giving them drugs or something.
Of course, I don't expect you to believe that, but then you're taking things and you're twisting it, you're spinning
no,
it a certain way. Of course you are.
Is
of
that,
course you are.
Is that what happened or not?
Of course you are.
Yeah, I'm not twisting anything around.
Yes.
That's what you believe.
No, that isn't what I believe.
That's it. You tell me. So there were never any golden plates then.
No, what I'm saying is that the way that you're assembling this, this is your assembling.
No,
of the,
no, it isn't my assembling.
Of
See,
course
don't
it is.
Try to twist this around. You're the one trying to twist this around.
I'm not.
That's what you believe. You believe
that is not what
fairy
I believe.
Tale. And you know what? I honestly feel sorry for you.
Well,
I feel sorry
okay.
for you.
Okay.
Yeah, and what's this about blood atonement and all this stuff?
Look, you're just running all over the place. Why don't you slow down and let's have a
I
know.
Because it's all a pack of lies.
I know that you don't
and
want to hear.
You're nothing uh-huh. but a spokesperson.
I'm not a spokesperson
you're
for anybody.
About the church's image, and that's what you're
I'm not worried about any
you're
image
trying,
or anything.
You just said you're worried about Mitt Romney making the church look bad. That
I never said that. I never said that. No. Slow down. Don't you think it's a mistake just to come on here and just. In the midst of a conversation, lie about
this
what
is,
I said?
I'm not lying. I said
you
I'm
did. I never said that.
I said I was paraphrasing.
Well, you can't.
Not,
paraphrasing doesn't mean that
you.
That doesn't.
Word for word, I said I'm paraphrasing.
Well, you're paraphrasing. You're what you
yeah,
claim. Just
you
a minute.
Much
just a minute.
Said, that
what
that
you,
Mitt Romney's family had a history of polygamy, and it might hurt his family. And you know what? That's the thing about the LDS Church. They'll do anything to protect their image. And you know I'm right. They're making a run for the White House, and that's the only
I don't,
reason.
You don't know what I think, and you can't accurately even say what I just said. You're telling me what I know.
Christian, you belong to a big cult. Huh? I mean, you use the name of God and Jesus for your own purposes, usually to profit, and then you're willing to, when it comes to money, though, all of your religious beliefs go right out the window when it comes to making money. You love gold more than you love God.
Well... Okay, have you said it?
And you know one, and you know what? The Mormon Church is dangerous. They really are. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what you. I mean, Karl Rove, the top advisor to the president, is LDS, and look where we're at now. He's there whispering in the president's ear all
what,
the time.
What in
and
the
look
world?
At where we're
why would
at
you
now.
Say that? Why would you say that he's whispering in his ear? What evidence do you have for that? Are you just fabricating? Are you just making it up? Okay. Well, he left me. Okay, well, I don't know. That seems like a bizarre call, obviously, that I'm just wondering what I did to offend him and what I did to make it impossible for us to have some kind of a conversation because a lot of the things that he said are utterly false and absurd, and then a number of other things that he said would be open for some discussion. The question about whether a person can believe that an angel appeared to Joseph Smith, that's certainly a legitimate issue that two reasonable people who could show a little respect for each other could talk about why one person disbelieves that and why another person believes it. But anyway, I hope I don't think I did anything to offend him or attack him or belittle him or anything. I just don't happen to agree with him. Okay, let's go to another caller. You're on the air.
You recommended that I read Todd Compton's book, In Sacred Loneliness, which I'm doing. I appreciate your referring me to them. Who is Todd Compton? Do you know anything about him?
Well, he's written some articles. He has a significant interest in Mormon history and has. You want to hold?
Oh.
Let me have you hold through this, and we'll come back to that. Okay, let's continue. All of my phone lines have lit up. I think I'm going to move along a little faster here and see if I can get everybody in a timely fashion. But caller, go ahead. Let me.
You referred to the book. Sacred Loneliness: The Plural Lives of Joseph Smith.
Yes, let me tell you a little bit about Todd Compton. He does have a PhD from UCLA. He, of course, the thing that he's best known for is In Sacred Loneliness, but he's also worked on a compilation of Hugh Nibley's writings. As far as I know, he's a believing, active member of the LDS Church. He's also worked on some other projects. He's done some articles. He's immersed in Mormon history, and there's a new book to two-volume book that just came out from Signature Books. I'm really excited about it. I just got these on Saturday, and so I'm. But by Deborah Anderson, Gary Bergera, and Todd Compton provided the foreword for this. So I was just looking at the jacket cover on this to give you a little bit of information about it. But at any rate, this book that he's done on polygamy is a subject that has so many different aspects and angles to it that you're not going to find two people who are going to see it the same. Todd Compton, I have many criticisms of things that he's done in his book. I think it's a good, respectable work on polygamy, but there are others who have... it's not by any means the end of the puts an end to the discussion of Joseph Smith's views on polygamy and what the whole idea of plural marriage was all about in Joseph Smith's mind. We only have we have such a small amount from Joseph Smith on the subject that because it was practiced in secret to start with and was not acknowledged by Joseph Smith openly, he died before ever acknowledging that. So it's Todd Compton's book is good, but there have been a number of reviews presenting criticisms of it, and I'm one that would present a number of criticisms. It has to do with what you consider as being credible historical documentation for things, and I would differ with him on quite a bit of that. So,
I think anybody that wants to understand plural marriage is to read the first 23 pages of the book. Now there's about 700 pages in here, so there's a lot of information on it. Well, he talks about 33 wives that he says I can verify for sure were married to him. And he said there's others, of course, that he can't really verify because there's not enough information. But he said the 33, he's confident that it's factual. And in the acknowledgments part, in other words, people would ask, well, where does he get his information? Okay, the places he gets his information, it talks about in the acknowledgments up in front. He says the Huntington Library in San Marino, California, they have a superb collection of Mormon manuscripts. The archives of the Historical Department of the LDS Church, were very helpful. The University of Utah campus, Salt Lake City, the Marriott Library on the University of Utah, Harold B. Lee Library at BYU, Library and Archives, even some of the reorganized church, some of their information, Chicago Historical Society, the Illinois State Historical Archives. In other words, there's just a lot of good sources that seems like it's good sources. And as far as him having children and so on, as you're reading the book, and it says there's 10 or 20 pages on each wife, and a lot of what is in the book is their comments, and some of them says, yes, I did have Joseph Smith's child. But again, when
but if you go back and you look at the documentation on this, there's not a statement from any of Joseph Smith's wives stating that they had had a child by Joseph Smith. What you have is you have a couple of late statements. I'm talking like 1905, in which somebody says that they had heard somebody say a few years earlier that a person was a daughter of Joseph Smith. I mean, that's the best one. And it's it just simply is, I think, very slim documentary evidence that would support that. Plus, you have to come up with some kind of explanation as to why this woman would have never acknowledged to people, would never have said, look, this is a child of Joseph Smith. That would have been such a remarkable honor, I would think, to women throughout that period, where no one was trying to hide plural marriage then. In fact, they were collecting statements and affidavits to say that Joseph Smith married this person and he married this person and he was the one that initiated it. Why in that kind of a setting would somebody be trying to hide the fact that they had given birth to a child of Joseph Smith's?
Well, a lot of these children, too, kept the name of her first husband. Because three-fourths of the 33 were already married to somebody else.
I think
probably
you need to go back and read the book a little closer. It's not of the 33 that Todd Compton lists, 11 were married to other were married to another husband. And
right. Which we've never been able to understand. But have you read the whole 700 pages?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
It's going to take me a long time to read it because I'm a very slow reader. I check references. I check footnotes. This footnoting system is extremely difficult to follow. That's one of my major criticisms of the book, is it's hard to track down things that he's talking about. But I have read substantially in the book, and...
what I'm getting at is a lot of these... of his polyandrous wives or polygamy wives, they have written here word for word their testimonies and so on. I just open up here and I can find anyway. You'd have to read the book.
Well, and I have read substantially in the book. I wonder if there's anyone who's read the whole book.
Well, I will have when I'm.
Well, you're not reading it very carefully. I gotta go.
Miscellaneous. On K-Talk. Hail on K-Talk.
Okay, let's continue. I'll be here until 7. Let's hear what's on your mind. We're going to go back to phone lines. We have a number of callers waiting. Let's see where we're headed. You're on the air.
You know, there used to be a man named Ross LeBaron who was often a guest on the Jim Kirkwood Show.
I know him very well.
You knew him?
Yes, I talked with him many, many, many hours.
Oh, did you, huh?
Uh-huh.
Did you ever go into his family and meet his wives and children?
No.
Well, one of the things I was leading up to was suggesting or asking, is there a polygamous community in Salt Lake? And if so, is this community completely underground in hiding? Or would it be possible to just... for those of us who are interested, become acquainted with some of these families and go into their houses and perhaps
guests on my show with me, and I have a person that I consider a dear friend of many years who was a polygamous wife. Her husband died a couple of years ago, but in general, I think they tend to be somewhat secretive. If you're going to Provo, there's this large facility down off to the right of the freeway, right at the point of the mountain, that's a polygamous enterprise, and they meet there. And of course, we hear about it in the news a lot, but I think it's unlikely to find very many of them that will just invite you into their home for dinner, but I don't know.
You know, I just suggested that because I know I've had dinner at the holidays in Jewish homes and dinner at holidays in Mormon homes, and a lot of these different churches will invite university students, which was the case in these respects, but I just wondered if there would be some element, some opportunity for interaction with the polygamous community. But I've kind of got the impression from most of the reports I've heard on the radio that these families are fairly dysfunctional, rather eccentric. Is that pretty much predominantly the case, or have you known there to be very happy, very harmonious family situations in polygamy? Right. Which would be the majority?
Well, there's a great deal of diversity, and it's hard to make any kind of blanket statement about them. But I think what happens with the news media is they don't have interest in a polygamous family where they're just living normal lives, and they're what they're looking for as a news story. They're looking for something that has some kind of sensational element to it, and the ones that are getting the attention in the news media are those very ones. But I have a cousin who's a polygamist, and I didn't even know that for many years. I never knew that, and so I would say that at least my experience, which is by no means lends anything to statistics, but my experience has been that there are many polygamists who are just living normal lives. They're working at jobs. I had dealings with one of the large groups for many years. I was in the vending machine business, and I bought vending machines from this company owned by a polygamous group, and they had all kinds of other enterprises that they owned, and I knew a number of the people. They never said anything to me about polygamy. I met with the man that was the head of this. He died a few years ago, but I spent some time in his office, and we were talking about financial matters, and he turned to talking about the importance of raising a good family, and asked me about my family. We had some conversation, and it was interesting. It was just, he was just a guy that was not, these people didn't strike me as somebody to be afraid of, or that they're weird or anything like that, although I never talked with any of them about polygamy per se. So I don't know. I think that the news media does create a substantial distortion, and people think that polygamists are child abusers and pedophiles and things like that. I think that's, I would guess that that's no more common. In fact, I would think it would be less common among polygamists than it would be among just the population in general. But I don't know of any figures on that, any statistics.
Well, in that polygamy family, which would be more the case? Was they had three women and one man, and all their children living in the same house, or would it be maybe just the man with one of his wives living together with all the other wives and children living in other houses?
It's been done both ways throughout the history of polygamy, both in the 19th century in LDS polygamy, and then these modern polygamous groups. They do it both ways, so there isn't any general way to describe that.
You know, one fear I've had is with all the present-day recognition of different sexuality, your sexual preference is now protected. We are recognizing different systems of marriage, such as same-sex marriage. I saw a psychologist, a man, and his legal wife representing by interracial marriage on television once, so apparently that's accepted. Now, why couldn't the polygamist movement more or less make itself known and enter the present-day application for freedom of sexuality and marriage and trying to see if they couldn't get some changes in the law that's recognizing and legalizing polygamy?
Well, there have, of course, been some who have made efforts. They've been high profile and have resisted the laws and in hopes of taking their case to the Supreme Court, and it hasn't happened. I can't imagine that it would not. I don't think polygamy would hold up in the Supreme Court these days, but the laws against polygamy, but it'll be interesting to see if that ever happens in today's climate of sexual orientation and everything. It just seems like polygamy is hard to get too excited about, I would think.
I really don't see anything wrong with it if you can afford to do it. If a man can afford to support more than one wife, and if he's the kind of guy that would probably be more comfortable with more than one wife, and his wives are women who would be more comfortable with living with other women with one man, well, why not? What's wrong with it anyway?
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your call. I need to move along. I've got a number of people waiting to get in, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, I have that opens up two lines. I have two lines open. If you'd like to join in our discussion, feel free to give me a call. And let's go to another caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Van.
Good evening. Did you notice that I had the answer to the question we had the other day as to who else was going to be a guest?
Yes, he's very good. Yes, we've got it. We had Paul Murphy from the Attorney General's office on a couple of months ago when a mix-up of times we didn't have AG Shurtleff on, and Paul did an excellent job of responding to questions and comments. But even in light of that, with more stuff coming out, we still will plan to get the Attorney General on the air to discuss things. He was on with Chris Van Oker this morning on his program. So, and he's a very busy man with a number of things, and polygamy seems to be that topic that will not go away. And however, the reason I called in is reference to the one caller who was rambling on and making some really outrageous comments. I've been amazed, Van, over the years, the amount of people that discuss Mormonism and just out and out tell either lies or just falsehoods or stuff that they don't even know what they're talking about. In reference to this caller, that somehow the church or the state is going after polygamists because of the political campaigning possibilities of Mitt Romney. This didn't seem to be the question when Orrin Hatch ran a few years ago, or back in the 60s when George Romney ran. There was no major league change at the time in the 60s for the blacks in the priesthood. Yet all of a sudden we're going after the polygamists because Romney wants to run for president. That would look bad. Even if we annihilated the practice of plural marriage, that's still going to be brought up. And there's, you know, I don't see that as the initial goal. That's almost accusing the leadership of the state and the church of doing something for the benefit of the church. And since in being around Attorney General Shurtleff, I just don't see that. I think he's sincere in the fact of going after those who are committing crimes in the name of polygamy. And the other thing.
My understanding is that I'm kind of startled by this, but from the discussion that I had with Paul Murphy a while back, and also in questions that were presented to him at the Sunstone Symposium on the panel that he participated in, the state, it seems to me, is taking a position that if you have a man and two consenting women and they're living in a polygamous relationship and they're having children and they're supporting them and there's no welfare fraud or anything like that going on, they're just not going to go after them.
Yes. I mean,
Yes.
And I think that's how they do it. I don't think they could get very far in light of the more liberal views on relationships and, that we have in the country, but whether going after other welfare fraud and child abuse and things of that nature. Another comment that the caller made was the fact that Karl Rove is, quote, a Mormon who whispers in President Bush's ear. Karl Rove is not LDS. And I don't know why people keep insisting that. Just because a person lives in Utah at one time and goes to school here does not make them a Mormon automatically. I'm sure the population of the church would double if everybody, sometimes somebody lives or lands in Utah, they automatically become a member of the church. If anybody, if we're going to use the theory or the conspiracy that someone's whispering in here, let's say Mike Leavitt, at least we know he's LDS.
So you're saying that he's not LDS and has never been LDS? Is that what you're saying? Because I don't remember.
I have never read that in anything. You know very well that when he became the assistant to President Bush, if that had been the case, the church news would have said something about it. But I've never seen him say anything or anybody else say it. And so we've got a mystery man that because he's from Utah or has lived in Utah at one time, he becomes this Mormon connection to the president. You know, and I just, it just doesn't exist. And then the concept about we have this high rate of the highest rate of child abuse and that we're covering it up. I love it when these people can't provide statistics or information. It's a cover-up. It reminds me of a situation I had back in the 80s when I lived in Colorado, and we've shared this story before, but it was the late Walter Martin was in town lecturing at a local church, and our friend Malin Jacobs and I had gone to the thing, and then Walter Martin brought up statistics. And, of course, Utah had the worst social statistics in the whole country. Worst this, worst crime, worst abuse, worst divorce, everything. And Malin went home and got the latest government statistics and came back, and during the question and answer period brought it up to Walter Martin. And, again, here's a man who brought the statistics up and made it an issue. And so Malin got up and said, here, I've got the latest ones, and everything you say is incorrect. And Martin got squeezed out of that one by saying basically, well, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. Next question. How he turned it around so fast. And I think you have a problem because, number one, you've got to show that that's what the statistics say. Number two, not all crimes committed in this state are necessarily LDS. And we'll come back at the commercial, I guess, and go on with that idea.
Okay. Hold on.
Van Hale and Mormon Miscellaneous on K-Talk.
Let's continue. You still there?
I'm still here.
Well, let me read this email that just came in, and you may want to make a comment or two about this. But
one or two comments?
Yeah. this email says it's a criticism of what I did. He says, Van, you let that hate-filled, misguided, typical anti-Mormon run off the mouth with every tired and old accusation against Mormons for an entire segment. If I want to hear that sort of thing, I'll start attending evangelical Protestant-type meetings or disgruntled ex-Mormon groups. It is very frustrating to tune into your show and listen to you allow this kind of rude behavior from a caller. I don't mind hearing disagreeing points of view, and I know you were being polite because you wanted to engage the caller in a dialogue, but it became very evident that the caller was not interested in anything except ranting against Mormons, slinging one fist full of slime after another. When things get to that point, I think it would be better to disconnect the caller or at least mute him at times to give yourself a chance to address his accusations. Let him spew his hatred in radio silence. So, I let him vent his anger and do everything that he could think of to try and insult and abuse Latter-day Saints and the church simply because I've been doing this for 25 years, and I started out with a certain philosophy that I would have an open forum, and obviously I really wasn't thinking I would engage this person in a dialogue because he wasn't the least bit interested in any kind of conversation and made the point. He didn't want to hear anything I had to say.
Yes.
But I feel like when something like that comes up, I need to let people vent like that because that's kind of basic to my initial philosophy. I don't think I'll change. But
well, of course, you and I have a dispute over that for years because I think you should be cutting some of these people off. But you handle the buttons, I don't. But plus the fact that there's an old saying, it's better to remain silent and thought a fool than open one's mouth and remove all doubt. And plus, in fact, the advantage of talk radio like this is that people can call in, as I'm doing right now, and refute or dispute or disagree with the person. That's the idea of the freedom of talk radio. If you've got something to say, even if it's a falsehood, somebody can come along and dispute it. And that's why we have the conversation. So, but getting back to this idea that somehow the church is behind some cover-up of criminal activity, I can think of an incident here within the last couple of years in which an LDS bishop was accused and arrested and charged with a sexual assault on a young lady in his ward. That was publicized in the paper. He later on was acquitted in a trial of it. And it just happens the fact that I happen to know enough about the prosecutor that the prosecutor in that case was also a bishop.
Mm-hmm.
Bishop. If anything had to be covered up, you would think that would be the case. We don't want our bishops being exposed to the public scrutiny of a trial. And yet here we it's very open, very publicized in the media and everything. And there's enough, I've been in law enforcement long enough that this stuff does not get covered up or hidden or anything of that nature.
Good point. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, one last comment. Okay. The idea that we're all brainwashed, I can guarantee you the amount of people I've known in the church, you and I are some people who've read everything, and yet we still maintain our belief and faith in the church. I was not brainwashed to do anything I've done. I did it on my own. And I still do things on my own, whether other people like it or not. And this is just garbage that someone who is blind to what's going on around him and trying to demonize the church and the church members. And so anyway, there you go.
Of course, I agree with you. Thank you.
You bet.
Appreciate that. Okay. All right, let's go to another caller. You're on the air.
Hi, man.
Hello.
You can write me down as someone you know that's read the entire Todd Compton book. Just in case you... Well, you say you didn't know anyone, so... now you do.
I'm glad to hear that. It's going to take me quite a long time to get through it. I've read a significant portion of every chapter in the book. I haven't been quite as interested in all of the biography material that he presents as I am interested in some of the, you know, some of the issues that pique my interest. But did you read through all of his footnotes?
Yeah.
That's a real struggle.
It's
a bad system. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I actually in college, I did a paper on polygamy, and I used his book as well as I could, looking up some references. But I actually talked to him about his Sunstone. He apologized to me for the poor format that was done. But that's actually what I was calling about.
Uh-huh.
That caller you had, I would call him an idiot, but I know you don't want name calling on your show. But
he was angry and abusive. I think that's not name calling. That's an observation. But
okay. he mentioned that he thought that the Mormon Church was out to get the government because the government forced them to become a state.
Yeah. Hold on. We'll come back to that. I thought that was humorous.
Van Hale and Mormon Miscellaneous on K-Talk. AM 630 KTKK.
Okay, let's continue. You still there?
Yeah.
All right, go right ahead.
I was just going to say this idea that the government forced Utah to become a state is utterly ridiculous since the government here applied for statehood 7 different times.
Starting in 1849, they really, really wanted to be a state.
Right, and so this idea that they're, this conspiracy theory that they're out for revenge against the government is just ridiculous. And then the thing about the child molestation, I haven't seen any statistics for several years, but I remember when I was working down in Orem, which is very highly, well, Salt Lake County, oh wait, no, Utah County, that's very highly Mormon.
Yes.
I remember while I was down there, a statistic came out that they were in the, that county was in one of the top 10 counties of least violent crimes in the whole United States.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, that would include sexual crimes.
Well, another thing, too, is when you start talking about Utah, the highest concentration of ex-Mormons anywhere in the world is in Utah. And so why wouldn't that apply that way? You could say, well, the reason for the child abuse, if it even were higher than average, why wouldn't you say, well, that's because we have this high concentration of ex-Mormons in the state? I mean, the state of Utah is not, statistics for the state of Utah are not Mormon statistics.
Right.
And, you know, anyone who deals with statistics is going to point out the absurdity of some of the conclusions that people draw from statistics. I talked to a person in the Bureau of Statistics about 20 years ago when this was being promoted strongly, that there were statistics that demonstrated that the Mormon Church was bad. And I talked to this person. He was from out of Utah. He'd never been a Mormon. He didn't even know much about Mormonism. And I was talking to him about this whole idea of child abuse. And he said, well, you can't even talk about child abuse statistically because there are not enough statistics gathered on this to, if you have a community that's aggressive about investigating child abuse cases, their statistics are going to make it look like they have more abuse than a community where they aren't aggressively going after this. So, it's such a matter that's such a small percentage that that you can't really talk about things where you have such a small percentage. You can't draw valid comparisons.
Right. And just one last thing. I'd encourage you to go ahead and let people go on like that, because I get entertained by it usually. I mean, crazy comments and people going off like that, I get entertained by it. So go ahead and keep doing that.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I'm sure there are a lot of people. I have had a number of people over the years criticize me for letting people that go on too long, but I, you know, I'm committed to the idea of allowing having an open forum for discussion here, and that caller, I think, was clearly outrageous. He was over the line. He didn't want to carry on a conversation. He was just trying to abuse and insult myself and other Latter-day Saints, but I felt like I just had to let him go for a little while. So I appreciate your your vote on that regard. Thank you.
Anyway, I'm glad I've been gone for 6 weeks at Fort Lewis. So
yeah, that's what I thought. I haven't heard you for a little while. I thought, oh, I'll bet you're at summer camp.
Yeah, that's where I was. But I'm back now.
Okay, well, good to have you back. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye. You're on the air. Hello, you're on the air? No? You there, caller? Okay, I guess not. Let's try another one. You're on the air.
Hi, Van. One thing I'd like you to check out with all your sources, if you can. I pulled out my Sacred Loneliness book, and you're talking about the timing of Joseph Smith's marriages, and in the book you say in the last 8 months of his life that he stopped marrying women, although in the year before he had married 14 in the first 6 months, and they're wondering why did he stop polygamy in his own life for the last 8 months of his life. Anyway, a state president he was talking to in Nauvoo said said this, and this is exact remarks. This is, what's his name? Nauvoo State President William Marks suggested in 1953, or 1853, that Smith began to have doubts about polygamy before his death. This is what I'd like you to see if you can check out. Anyway, the state president said when the doctrine of polygamy was introduced into the church as a principle of exaltation, I took a decided stand against it, which stand rendered me quite unpopular with many of the leading ones of the church. Of course, they were practicing. Joseph, however, became convinced before his death that he had done wrong. For about 3 weeks before his death, I met him one morning in the street, and he said to me, "Brother Marks, we are a ruined people." I asked how so. He said the doctrine of polygamy, or spiritual wife system, has been taught and practiced among us will prove our destruction and overthrow. "I have been deceived," said he. "In reference to its practice, it is wrong. It's a curse to mankind, and we shall have to leave the United States soon, lest it can be put down and its practice stopped in the church." So that's from the Nauvoo state president.
Yes, I'm well familiar with that statement and that whole concept. I simply do not find that credible. William Marks was had problems with some of Joseph Smith's teachings and with plural marriage and so forth. He is presenting this in 1853. This is after the saints had moved out here and had announced publicly the practice of plural marriage and had pointed back to Joseph Smith as the originator of it. But doesn't it seem peculiar that all of these people who were close to Joseph Smith, none of them, that we have no other testimony of this sort from any of those who were close to Joseph Smith and who did enter into plural marriage and were familiar with the whole teaching and practice of it. But we have William Marks, who 3 weeks before Joseph Smith's death, at which time William Marks was in virtual apostasy from the church, that Joseph Smith would say something like this to him, but not to anybody else. I just simply don't think that that's a credible statement. I don't believe William Marks is telling the truth. That's my thinking on it. But the fact that Joseph Smith didn't marry plural wives, as far as we can tell. It's kind of hard to say for sure. I think it's pretty sure. But his active marrying of polygamous wives was stopped. But I don't know what to make of that. I don't know that we can... It may well have had something to do with his relationship with Emma, that this was a big issue, a big problem between him and Emma. She accepted and approved of his marriage to at least some wives. It seems clear that she did not approve of some others.
Well, she definitely did not approve of Fanny Alger, which is his first one, because, in fact, it was, according to the book here, it was a secret marriage. And when this was a young girl, either 16 or 17, living with the two of them, and they secretly got married, but Oliver Cowdery actually said they had a dirty, nasty affair, when he wrote a letter to his brother.
Yes.
And polygamy in the beginning of the church took a lot of people out of the church. In fact, Oliver Cowdery accused Joseph of being an adulterer, and Oliver Cowdery was excommunicated by Joseph for calling him an adulterer. But
he wasn't really excommunicated by Joseph Smith. It was a council meeting. But there is some question about the whole Fanny Alger situation. I have tentatively found myself moving in the direction of believing that was a plural marriage, but it's not there are problems with the whole issue regarding Fanny Alger. A lot of historians have seen Louisa Beeman as the first plural wife of Joseph Smith. I think there is a fair argument for Fanny Alger being a plural wife of Joseph Smith, but you know, if you went through the whole issue. Go ahead.
Wouldn't Emma have known about his first polygamous wife?
Well,
because they were secretly married, and when Emma found out, she kicked Fanny Alger out of the house.
Well, but you see, did that really happen?
Well, we don't know. It either did or didn't.
That's the problem. That's the problem, is that when you're working from reminiscent things and things that are coming through tainted sources, and there's probably some truth to some of the things that that Bennett was saying in his expose, but there's so many things that there are problems with. It's just hard. It's very difficult. I spent a lot of time on this a few years ago and did a paper for that I presented at the Mormon History Association convention on polygamy, and it's, when you get right down to it, it's very difficult to sort these out, where you have people on two different sides taking a position that conflicts with each other. Then you have to start looking, I think, at the question of how credible are the testimonies, and what motivation would somebody have for claiming or disclaiming something, and it's not easy to sort this out. I was looking particularly at the period of time in 1842 with John C. Bennett and this proposal of marriage that Joseph Smith had made to Sidney Rigdon's daughter, Nancy Rigdon, and I sorted through all of that material, but something, and I came to some tentative conclusions, but there is enough documentation on both sides of this issue that it's I could be moved in one direction or another by finding some more information or something. So it's just a very difficult thing. This whole Fanny Alger incident, I throughout most of my studies in Mormonism, I seriously questioned whether that was an actual polygamous marriage or if this were something that was twisted or distortion, because we're working with some questionable testimony and material in it.
I think Todd Compton says it was most likely a polygamous marriage.
Yes, and there are others. There are some historians on both sides of that question. As I say, in recent times, I have moved more in the direction of believing that it was a plural marriage, probably the first one.
But, you know, I still can't quite figure out. I'm looking at the list of Joseph's wives in Todd Compton's book and then the list of Joseph's wives in Fawn Brody's book, and they're mostly all the same names. Sometimes the date of the marriage might be off by a year from one to the other. I still don't understand why he's marrying other men's wives, and even though the wives stay with the first husband, and sometimes too, they're both. I don't understand. Well, I don't understand that. That's number one. But also, how can one woman be sealed to two men?
Well, this I've been thinking about this for a number of years, and it is a puzzle. And the problem is that we have. Information that comes from Joseph Smith on plural marriage, but that I think I have constructed what his theology was regarding plural marriage. I can't quite see how to fit into it, this idea of Joseph Smith being sealed to other men's wives. Now, I'm not at this point the evidence, there is very little, if any, evidence that Joseph Smith, or persuasive evidence that these were sexual marriages.
Well, then you'd have to read I know it's hard to get through all the women of Joseph Smith, because there might be 10 or 20 pages on each one in Sacred Loneliness. But if you read that book in Sacred Loneliness, all the wives stories, then that'll clear that up for you.
Well, it doesn't by any means clear it up. For one thing, I'm much more critical on documentation than Todd Compton is. When you have somebody in 1905 saying that she heard something in 1880 from a person making a claim that doesn't seem likely to me, Todd Compton's prepared to accept that without question. I'm not.
Well,
I've dealt with too many issues in Mormon history over the years, and have tracked down sources and reminiscences can certainly be accurate, but they can certainly be inaccurate. So,
well, I think instead of second or third hand stories, I think if you read the book again, you'll find that's mostly not true. But it's something if somebody's remembering, 40 years ago. But I don't. Well, most of his polyandrous wives, in other words, he's marrying other people's wives. According to the book, most of them were friends of his and active church member friends of his. And
well, I think you need to read it more closely. I think it sounds to me like I may be reading it more closely than you are.
I just read it.
Well, then I'm saying go back and reread it yourself.
I don't know how long
because,
it's been since you read it.
What do you mean? How long? I've been reading it ever since it came out. I don't read a book. I study a book, and I spend a lot of time looking through footnotes. And as we were talking earlier, his footnote system is horrible and very difficult to track things down. But I was reading these statements of these people in the church archives when Todd Compton was in primary. I mean, I've been at this topic much longer than he has, and he certainly brought out a lot of material that I was not familiar with, but I know a lot. I have a lot of material in my files that he hasn't incorporated into his book that I found. I've read the pertinent parts for me of every single chapter in the book.
So what's your opinion on why, like Orson Hyde, for example? He was an apostle, and while he was on a mission to Palestine, Joseph married his wife, Miranda.
Well,
why?
Well, I haven't been able to sort out this. If you want my thinking as about this, that would make it fit into my analysis of Joseph Smith's theology on plural marriage, it would be this, and I haven't. I'm not prepared to document this or anything at this point, but what you find, you even find this in section 132, is there this whole idea of all kinds of ceilings of different sorts, and these marriages to these ceilings to Joseph Smith of women who are already married. Some of them, I think, there's an easy answer, and that is that. He was perhaps sealed to them for eternity only because they were married to men who were not faithful, active priesthood holders or non-members. That would fit in easily into my thinking about it. But you bring up the one of Orson Hyde. That's, to me, is kind of the toughest one. I can't quite make sense out of that.
Well, that wasn't the only one. There are quite a few.
Well, I know, but if you go through them, there are 11 that Todd Compton brings into his book who were already married, and if you go through them, you can sort out a number of them who were married to non-members or who.
Well, in the book, it does give
Van Hale and Mormon Miscellaneous on K-Talk.
Okay, I'm back. Are you still there, caller?
Yeah, I think the book here may have an answer to why they're marrying other people's women. But Joseph regarded marriage performed without a Mormon priesthood authority as invalid. So that means everybody that's ever been married on this planet before Joseph came along, he regarded their marriage as invalid, and then he's free to have any woman or girl that he wants, I guess.
Well, that's one point, but that certainly doesn't hold up as you look at Joseph Smith's entire concept of marriage. He certainly did recognize and acknowledge civil marriages, but he saw a marriage sealed for time and eternity through priesthood power as something superior to a civil marriage. But there was still, within the church, it was advocated and taught that if you're not legally married, that it's adultery to have sex with somebody who's not your spouse. And that, of course, would not be adultery if Joseph Smith didn't recognize the civil marriages. And there's just a substantial body of material that makes it impossible to refute that Joseph Smith didn't just write off all marriages the way that would suggest, but he did see there is something to what you're saying. I have a statement here of Orson Hyde that he made in September 15th, 1869. And I don't know if I should read it, but because I've got other callers waiting. But he just—it's interesting. He talks about his first marriage to Miranda, and he talks about his two plural marriages that he entered into in Nauvoo, in February or March of 1843. He was married by Joseph Smith, and also another one that same year to Mary Ann Price, and. So, this raises an interesting question. He doesn't mention anything about Joseph Smith being married to his wife, Miranda, but there was a sealing. There's evidence that convinces me that there was a sealing that took place between Joseph Smith and Miranda. What was the nature of that? I mean, what did it have to do with? Was it the kind of a sealing wherein Joseph Smith and Miranda were expected to have offspring? And I just don't, the problem we're facing is we just don't have enough information, I think, to sort these things out. And the simplistic answers that people are prepared to give just, to me, fall short. We've got to look deeper.
Also, Brigham Young had a little different idea, too. On page 17 of the book, Brigham Young, in an 1861 speech, said, "If a woman can find a man holding the keys of the priesthood with higher power and authority than her husband, and he is disposed to take her, he can do so. Otherwise, she has to stay where she is, and there's no need for a bill of divorcement." So Joseph, having more keys and authority than anybody, I guess, could have any woman he wants.
But the thing is, You take a little excerpt out of one sermon by Brigham Young and try to extrapolate that into a whole theology, and it just doesn't work for me.
Well, he did say it, though.
What he said, we need to try and sort out what he meant by that. But the idea, the stronger, more significant, more obvious answer to a lot of questions pertaining to plural marriage come from the better documents, from DNC 132 and this letter that Joseph Smith wrote to Nancy Rigdon, and the presentation of polygamy in 1852 that Orson Pratt did on assignment from Brigham Young, and Orson Pratt's writings in the Seer in 1853. These, I think, are far more significant and important documents that help us to see what the basics of Mormon polygamy started out as, and some of these things that are a little bit puzzling, I'm not convinced by any means that Todd Compton has sorted this out. I don't think anyone sorted it out. There are too many questions that need to be answered just to say, well, Joseph Smith didn't recognize any marriages and he could just go take anyone he wanted. Well, or in a statement by Orson Hyde, he's talking about his three wives, and he's sealed to all three of these wives, and he's not indicating there that his first wife is really Joseph Smith's and not his. But we do know that there was a lot of different kinds of sealings going on. These two new books that have just come out, I've just barely got them on Saturday, are talking about the documents that demonstrate the this whole concept of sealing in Nauvoo, in Nauvoo during the lifetime of Joseph Smith, and shortly after. There were all kinds of sealings going on men to men and men to women for what ultimate reason, it's hard to say, other than there, Joseph Smith did have this idea that there is a family on earth and there is a family that we will have in heaven. And this, not just a family, but associations of friends, and how, what the sealing of one friend to another would have to do in the eternities, I just don't know what Joseph Smith's thinking was on that. To try and make it into some kind of questionable or nefarious activity, I think is uncalled for at this point.
I know in the history of the church, he denied, well, Joseph Smith denied polygamy almost to the day he died.
Well,
in history,
yes,
of the church, Volume 6. Page,
he didn't make very many. People talk about all these denials he made. He made two or three, or all the denials that he made. But what he was denying is, he was denying the idea that he had. He was denying. I think he was just, he was leading people to think that he didn't have any other wives than Emma.
Yeah.
It is public statements, but his statements are quite carefully worded, to where you could go back in and say, well, you know, in a technical way, maybe this was correct. But I think Joseph Smith was unwilling to acknowledge plural marriage during that, before his death.
If you read History of the Church, page, or Volume 6, page 408 to 412, he denied having more than one wife. This is just virtually days before he died.
Okay, we're out of time.
Okay, right. Thanks.
I'll be back next week with a guest, Darius Gray.
On K-Talk, AM 630 KTKK.